Hello, I'm Oliver Wang, and you are listening to Heat Rocks. My co-pilot Morgan Rhodes can't be with us today because she's South by Southwesting it this week, but she'll be back soon enough. In every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about Heat Rock, a highly flammable album that's seared into their memory. Today's slab of fire is Cameosis, the 1980 LP by the New York funk players known as Cameo. By the time Cameo dropped Cameosis, they had already put out 4 albums in 3 years. But this new LP was their first to touch the very top, number 1 of the R&B charts, by drawing from the disco-funk sound they had laid down in the late 1970s, while also hinting at the new directions they would take in the 1980s. In the words of my man Ricky Vincent, the number 1 funk scholar out there, Cameosis was, quote, a masterpiece of pop moods while always coming with fat bottoms when the chips were down. To talk about Cameosis, we are joined by the legendary Greg Broussard, a.k.a. Egyptian Lover. You can't talk about the history of Los Angeles hip-hop without invoking his funky majesty. While still a teenager, Egyptian Lover joined up with the premier party crew in L.A. of the early 80s, Uncle Jam's Army, and in 1984, he released the first in a series of groundbreaking early hip-hop albums, On the Nile. He stays out there in the mix with his own Egyptian Empire Records label, and if you're very lucky, you might find him cutting up the ones and twos on a stage near you. Egyptian Lover, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Good to be here.
Let's just jump right into this. Why is Cameosis a heat rock for you?
Man, that when that album dropped, there was nothing out there like Shake Your Pants. And before that album dropped, they had another album with a song called Why Have I Lost You on it, which was my favorite song, but it wasn't played on the radio. When Cameosis came out, they actually redid their own song and put it on Cameosis, and I'm like, oh my goodness, they remixed the song. So the album was already good for me as soon as I got it. You know, it was just an amazing album from beginning to end. The bass guitar player, I mean, Larry Blackman and all them, they were just great. They were awesome. I mean, it was like the band. They were like the number one band around. I mean, they was better than Barclays, One Way. You know, they were competing with Rick James, Prince, and Michael Jackson. I mean, Cameo was that group. You know, they were the ones.
Now, I'm just curious because I'm guessing you were probably around 16 or 17 years old when this came out. And what was a young Egyptian Lover listening to in 1980?
That's what it was. Cameo, Barclays, Confunction, One Way, Michael Jackson, Prince, Rick James.
Yeah.
Those were the big ones.
Now, was this stuff that you were hearing on the radio? Were you buying LPs? Was it cassettes? Like, how were you consuming?
I was the high school DJ, so I had to go to the record store and buy all these new records that came out. So, and I was making mixtapes for the school. So everything that was new, I had it first.
Yeah.
And I had to go to the albums and listen to which one I might think the people would like. So I was picking the hits on the record and Shake Your Pants. As soon as I got the album, it was like, this is the hit. And I put it on there and I made my own little pause button mix from it. And it was incredible.
I don't want to take us on too far a tangent, but I'm fascinated, as someone who's done research on high school DJs, what got you started as early as high school DJing? Because in the late 70s, that would have been really the first generation of mobile DJs.
Yeah, that was definitely the first generation. And I was bused from L.A. to the Valley, and it was probably an hour and a half, 2-hour bus ride, and we got kind of bored. So a friend of mine named Snake Puppy, who later joined LA Dream Team, we went to school together.
Yeah,
he had a competition. Said, let's see who can make the best mixtape so we can listen to the tape on the way to school. So we have to listen to the radio because sometimes they play some terrible songs. So I went home and I'm like, I can do a mixtape.
Yeah.
So I was pause button, you know, listen to the radio, pause button on the breakdown, waiting for the song to play again, and I'm pausing to make the breakdown longer. And my little brother said, what are you doing? I'm like, waiting for the radio, the song to come on again. He said, why don't you just go buy the 45? I'm like, man, that's a great idea. So I went to the record store, bought like six 45s, came back, and I just did a serious pause button mixtape on the breakdowns and the intros and just made it sound great.
Yeah.
And that Monday, I went to school and played it, and everybody lost their mind. Like, I need a copy of that. I'm like, how much? I'm like, $5. And I sold like 10 tapes. I said, $10, and I sold like 20 tapes.
Right. The light every bulb day, went over your head right there, yeah.
Right. So every day, I was just going to school selling tapes. And definitely, Shake Your Pants was my best mixtape song ever. Mm-hmm. So on the breakdown, it went like, shake your pants.
Shake your pants.
Shake, 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 and it was just killing everybody. And everybody was like, how did you do that? I'm like, pause button.
The art of the pause tape is really a lost art.
Man, it was so, that's how I started DJing, doing that. So that was, this song is like what made me at my high school.
That's incredible. I got to stay on this for just a second. What were the main record stores in L.A. of that era, as well as what were the main radio stations that were playing stuff like this back then?
Well, there was the Cat, was they changed the name to KGFJ later on, and then K-Day, of course.
Right.
So those stations were playing, but they weren't playing it fast enough. Like, while they were playing We're Going Out Tonight.
We're going out tonight, and I want my friends to know, cause you look just right.
I'm selling Shake Your Pants already at school. And they were still, you know, they had to play the single that was out.
Right.
They couldn't just play what they wanted.
Right. And how about the record stores that you were getting this stuff?
I was going to the local little record store and the grocery store. So it was a little corner record store in a store called Country Farms on the corner of Slauson and Compton Avenue.
Wow.
Right in the heart of L.A. And that's where I live, like four blocks down the road. So I used to go there and buy records. At one time, I was making so much money selling these cassette tapes, I had every single record that was out. Because every time I made money, I would go to the record store and buy music.
Right.
And at school, I was making probably about $500 a day selling tapes.
Wow.
In
1980, I mean, or late 70s. I mean, that's
79, really, 80, 81.
Wow. I love the idea that it was a local market that had records on the side.
It was fantastic. So cool. It was like a little hole in the wall, just selling every record. I had every record in there, so then I had to expand. And so I found out about the warehouse in Fox Hill Mall, and I just went there. Whoa, you got a lot more records. So I started buying more, and then I found out about Tower Records on Sunset. So I caught the bus up there, and somebody said, you need to go to Melrose. Then I went to Melrose, and it was like Prime Cuts on Melrose and different record stores on Melrose, and that they had a lot of underground records, and that's where I discovered more of the new wave stuff and the punk rock stuff. And like, wow, I never heard this before. And then when Planet Rock came out, of course, they had it first there, and Super Rhymes came out, they had it first, and all that stuff.
Now, you know, you were mentioning before the other things that you were listening to, and I think what is so interesting about funk music in 1980 is that it's a real, to me at least, it seems like a real crossroads moment, because on the one hand, you still have the influence of disco, I mean, heavy in 1980 still. That includes everyone from, you know, Diana Ross had her mega smash album, Diana, that year.
I said, upside down, you're turning me, you're giving love instinctively, round and round, you're turning me.
You had Michael Jackson's Off the Wall was still carrying over from 79 by that point.
Brothers Johnson.
Right. You have Stevie Wonder and George Benson doing sort of a smoothed out. I think of it as like a Quiet Storm meets disco style.
So they were actually recording these songs when disco was still hot.
Right.
And they didn't release them until the funk stuff started coming in. So there was a good part of time in the late 70s and early 80s where disco and funk kind of merged.
Absolutely.
And you got like Baby, We Could Do It, Take Your Time, Do It Right.
Exactly.
I Like What You're Doing to Me by Young & Company. And all these songs were disco and funk mixed together, and they were great club songs.
But then you also have, also 1980, Zapp's first album. And More
Zapp
Bounce
was a whole different level. When More Bounce came out, it was a totally different thing. It was like, what is this?
So now, where does Cameo fit into all this?
Cameo was more into the band, because a lot of bands were out back then, like I was saying earlier. Barcades, Confunction.
Ohio Players.
It was just so many bands, and it was cool to hear them. So I went to my first concert with all the bands there, Gap Band, and I loved it. Now, to me, One Way turned the show out. I mean, they had a great show. And then Cameo, of course, I love them to death, and then Gap Band and One Way, Confunction, Barcades. But One Way's show at that time was so incredible. They had Cutie Pie, and the Cutie Pie just blew up. Cutie Pie, you're the reason why I love you so. I don't want you to go.
You're the girl who makes me feel so good. West Coast classic, right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so were you already listening to Cameo going back to, let's say, their first album from, 77, which had, I think, Rigor Mortis was off of that one?
Not yet. My first Cameo song was I Just Want to Be. And that was like the popper's dream, when we put that on, everybody would pop, lock, and pop, and it was just incredible.
You've already elaborated a little bit on just the idea that Cameo was somewhat different from some of the other acts I named because they were oriented around a band and the sound of a band. I'm wondering, even within that, though, this is still an era in which Funkadelic is putting out records for Confunction. We mentioned the Ohio Players. What is it about Cameo's sound, if anything, that made them distinct and unique, especially relative to the other groups that in general were similar to them?
They had some different sounds, like on Shake Your Pants, it goes, dun, so with all those little sounds, we're like, what is that? And they only had it. It almost sounded like scratching, but before scratching.
Right, right.
And it was just like, wow, that is so new. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
So we liked the sound. They had it on a couple different songs, so we knew that was the Cameo sound. And then the way they would go, like, ooh, and the guitar player, and then you have a lot of horns. So they had their own sound. So when you hear that sound do a different song, it's like, it's still Cameo.
Yeah.
And like, it's just like, I Just Want to Be, but now it's Shake Your Pants. Like, oh man, this is great. And then they went on to make more songs. Like, it's just, they were just one of the bands that probably were the best ever.
I'm really glad that you brought up Shake Your Pants and specifically the sounds in it, because every time I listen to that song in particular, I spend the first 30 seconds just trying to figure out, what are they even using to make these? Is this the synthesizer? Or are they just bringing in live instruments or just
nobody
live?
Knew? I know now, but back then it was like, no way could I ever figure that out.
So let us behind the curtain. Like, what were they using?
Well, inside of this drum, there's a wire, and you put this rag on this wire, and you just rub it. So there's a little wire inside of the drum.
Ingenious.
Yeah.
I love that. We had one of our early guests was Dame Funk, who I'm sure you're familiar
yes.
with. And he was talking about the album Miracles by Change. And he described Change as being quote unquote sophisticated funk. Like that
yes.
was the lane that he put them in. What type of funk would you put Cameo into?
Party funk. Mm. Like on one of the songs, they say, we're the party people night and day. And I think Michael might have stole that line from them. But they said in one song, we're the party people night and day. And it's like, that's Cameo. They make party funk. Funk you can dance. So like I said, the pop lockers would love.
Yeah.
Anything Cameo had, at least one of those records on the album, is going to be something you could pop to.
Yeah. The other thing, too, we mentioned earlier, is just the prolificness of the group and the fact that Cameo was just putting out. You were mentioning, before we started taping that it seemed like they had a new album out every 6 months or so.
Every 6 to 8 months, yeah.
What on Cameosis made it, if at all, different than, let's say, the albums that came before? Like, what shift did you hear with this one?
They upgraded their their beat on Shake Your Pants. They made it more of a danceable beat. It was almost like a long version on the album. It was like an album version, but it was like a long version. And they had a break in there with it, Shake Your Pants. Shake, 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 shake. It was great for the poppers. They would do all the different kind of pop moves on that break, and then it go into the song again. And it was like a popper's dream.
Yeah.
So they had that, and that was probably the number one popping song at the time. Then other groups would have come out with stuff like One Way had Pop What You Got, and other groups had different things, but Cameo did it. I mean, they hit it right on the mark with that.
Yeah. Since you keep mentioning popping and locking, I'm wondering, at what point did this become dominant as the street dance style in L.A.? Because I know Campbell Lock came out probably early, mid-70s, if I remember.
Yeah, that was probably different than popping. And popping was more, it came from up north, like in the Bay Area.
Oh, okay.
And popping was more just hard-hitting. And,
yeah.
And Shake Your Pants was definitely, the clap they used in there, it was definitely a popping song.
And when did you see popping start to really break out in L.A.?
On I Just Want to Be. When that song came out, I saw some guys dancing to that and hitting hard on the claps.
Music is here for everyone. Just to dance, just to have some, just because.
And it was like, wow. It made the claps in the song made you want to dance. And then when I heard Shake Your Pants, like, wow, they're saying Shake Your Pants and saying Shake at the same time. It's like, they're creating new pop moves. So people was always creating these moves. We didn't have YouTube back then.
Yeah, yeah.
So we would have to imagine what they're talking about, and we would just create those Shake Your Pants moves.
We're going to take a little break right now so you can hear about some of our other wonderful podcasts here at Max Fun. But we will be back with Egyptian Lover talking about Cameosis briefly. Keep it locked.
Hi, I'm comedian Emily Heller.
And I'm cartoonist Lisa Hanawalt.
And we're the hosts of Baby Geniuses.
Do you want to learn weird new facts?
Do you like hearing successful, creative women talk about their poop?
Do you want the scoop on Martha Stewart's pony?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, our show is for you.
We interview people like Paul F. Tompkins,
Kristen Shaw,
Michael Che,
and more. So check us out on Maximum Fun.
And let us mess up your brain.
Yes, please.
Baby Geniuses, we know everything. Baby Geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Hi, everybody. I'm your oldest brother, Justin McElroy.
I'm your middlest brother, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your sweet baby brother, Griffin McElroy.
Me and 3,000 of your closest friends just found your next podcast obsession.
Cereal!
Okay, but like the second best podcast.
Cereal!
Oh, just listen to my brother and me on MaximumFun.org.
There you go.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Heat Rocks. Our guest today is the legendary Egyptian Lover, and we're here talking about Cameo's album, Cameosis. I wanted to just detour for a sec to talk about those early years that you spent with Uncle Jam's Army. And for our listeners who aren't familiar with it, do you want to just explain who and what Uncle Jam's Army was?
Well, Uncle Jam's Army was the biggest dance promotion team in L.A. So you had a lot of people giving parties, mobile DJs giving parties, but Uncle Jam's Army was by far the bigger and best of them all. They had the bigger sound systems. Mm. They had the bigger venues, and tons of people was talking about it in the street. So before social media, it was just word of mouth and visual. So like you're driving down the street, you see a poster hanging on the pole and it says Uncle Jam's Army, blah, 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 this date, da, da, da. And then you go to the beach and you get a flyer. Oh, wow. Then you go to the mall and you get another flyer. Oh, I got to go to this party. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you hear it on the radio, Uncle Jam's Army at the blah, blah, blah this Sunday. And it's like, okay, I heard it on the radio. I saw the poster and I got a flyer. I'm going to this party. So They covered promotion very well. So when I became a mobile DJ out of high school, I knew I could DJ. I gave my own party. They snatched down my posters. You know, I couldn't pass out enough flyers. I'm only one guy. And somebody said, if you can't beat them, join them. I'm like, oh, man, I can't join Uncle Jam's Army. They're Uncle Jam's Army. But then one day, my friend Snake Puppy and I was in the mall, and Roger was passing out flyers, and Snake Puppy said, Roger, you have the best dance promotion team there is, but you don't have the best DJ. my boy here, Egypt, is the best DJ. And Roger knew me, but he didn't know me as a DJ. He said, you can DJ? I'm like, yeah. And since then, I joined up with them, and I became Uncle Jam's Army number one DJ.
Now, what would you have heard at an Uncle Jam's Army, let's say, in 82 when you joined up with them?
When I joined up with them, they was playing a lot of funk, part of the Funkadelic. They're playing the early hip hop stuff, Cameo, Barquets, mm-hmm. all the hot singles that were out, the long versions, Heartbeat, Tanya Gardner, and all that kind of stuff. Zap, Roger.
I mean, I think in a lot of ways, Uncle Jam's Army was really pivotal to creating, when we now think of an L.A. sound
Definitely.
To black music of the 80s, Uncle Jam's Army, K-Day gets a lot of credit partly because they were the first, 24-hour rap station. But I feel like Uncle Jam's Army was really the unifying force, especially. Okay.
Roger Clayton had an ear for music, and he would definitely pick out the hits before anybody. And the reason why K-Day was so popular is because they copied Uncle Jam's Army's playlist. So we were playing stuff that the radio would never play. Greg Mack came, I think, from Texas to L.A. Mm. He actually came to the Uncle Jam Army party and wrote down every song we played and played it on K-Day. And that happened a lot.
Yeah.
To eventually Roger was like, man, you're stealing our stuff and you're taking credit for it. He actually choked Greg Mack live on the radio. Whoa. And they fell out a little bit, but then became friends again later on. But Roger didn't like it at all. So yeah. He's like, you're taking all the credit, thinking you're the L.A. king, da, da, da. But no, it was Uncle Jam's Army sound, and you're just taking our sound and just putting it on the radio.
Right. And I think this is one thing that folks maybe don't think of enough, is that radio programmers, I think now still, but especially then, they weren't necessarily breaking records. They were waiting for the DJs to break the records, and then they picked up on what was hot in the parties, and that's what got into rotation on the radio.
Yeah, the only way you can actually break a record is if you know if people like the record.
Yeah.
So if you're a DJ out there in the L.A. sports arena with 10,000 people, when you play a record and all of them dance, this is a hit record.
Yeah.
You play a record and everybody leave the floor, you're a janitor DJ because you just clean the floor. And this record should never be played again. And that's just the way it goes. So mobile DJs knew what records were hot.
Yeah.
There were some records that you liked and you played them anyway because you liked them. So you got away with it. But you knew what records were hot because you knew what records the people like to dance to.
Is there a record that you helped break that to this day you're still proud that you played a role in that?
I played a lot of records first, but I mean, I don't consider it breaking the record because they would have heard it eventually. Like Play at Your Own Risk, they would have heard that eventually. Scorpio by Grandmaster Flash, they would have heard that eventually. But those were all the up-tempo records are the ones that I was just on it. Like, I got to play this record.
Yeah.
And so that electro sound is what I played in Uncle Jam's Army. That was my set. I like to play all the up-tempo stuff.
Though, if I have this right, they didn't really call it electro back then. I
mean, no,
that term came later.
Yeah, it was just hip-hop.
Yeah. And it also sounds that, especially in terms of the music and the sets then, it wasn't necessarily built around specific kind of regional allegiances. In other words, you would play stuff that doesn't really matter where it came from.
Yeah, never care where it came from.
There'd be L.A. acts in there, but that's not an exclusive thing.
I never knew. I didn't care. I mean, I didn't even know the Whispers came from L.A. So if they had a hit record, I would play the record. Right. I didn't know. There was no favoritism at all.
Right.
And if it was East Coast, West Coast, Detroit, Miami, it didn't matter. If it was a good record, we played the record.
Right. And of course, Cameo comes out in New York, so.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Right.
It was just a great record.
Right. So coming back to Cameosis, especially from a DJ's point of view, there must be a song on here that for you is the fire track, like just the go-to.
Shake Your Pants was like the one.
Yeah.
And we always play We Have a Lost You, too. We'll play only one or two ballads, so we'll play maybe a Prince song, and We Have a Lost You was a great song for people to dance to.
So with the ballads off of this album, would there be just, let's say, a 2-3 song set where you would just slow things down, or would you drop a ballad in the middle of an
album? No, it would be a 2-3 song set.
Okay. And so that I would assume like the dance floor would just switch into people just bumping and grinding, yeah, to get in their slow jam.
Well, they would kind of know like, okay, he's playing this song. I don't know where he's going to go from here, so he might be playing a ballad next. So now you got to dance with a girl you want to slow dance with on a fast record. He might be slowing it down next. And if we do, oh my goodness. Now you get to slow dance with a girl you've been watching all night. And like, I'm lucky.
Right. But you got to be thinking two songs ahead just set it up properly.
They used to ask me, when you going to play a slow song? I'm like, after blah, blah, blah. He's like, okay. So when that song comes, when you grab the girl you've been wanting.
Now, in terms of off of Cameosis, is there a sleeper jam on here for you?
Oh, wow. I think I Care For You is a great song.
What makes it a sleeper jam?
They never played it on the radio. I think the only person that ever played it was... Jammin' James or Slow Music Radio or something like that. But Slow Jammin' James is probably the only one who found ballads on records that nobody played except for At Your House or something. So yeah. I loved him for that.
What is it that you hear in this song that to you just sticks with you?
They're singing. I mean, they have this one guy with this high-pitched voice, and then you got the low voice, like, baby, baby, baby. I mean, I just loved all that. I mean, all that inspired me, too. So like when I go, baby, I always think about songs that I heard before, and Cameosa's album was definitely when I was writing my raps and stuff like that for high school. I was always listening to that and hearing what they were saying, and it was pretty cool.
Actually, if you could elaborate on that a little bit more, so what was it that you were listening to that influenced your own artistic evolution at that time?
Well, definitely, like, the rap came from Rapper's Delight. I said a hip, the hip, of a hip, hip, hop, you don't stop. Rock it out, baby, bubble to the boogity, bang, bang, the boogie to the boogity beat. Now, what you hear is... When we first heard that, it was like, wow, their poetry and, you know, in rhythm. I love this. And so I wanted to do that. And then I heard King Tim III, and then Super Rhymes came out, and it was like, wow, this is amazing. So I was writing songs at the time and writing raps and putting them on mixtapes on instrumentals at the time. And I would always listen to beats and like try to make an instrumental out of it. And I wanted to do Shake Your Pants Like That because at the end of it, it has like this little break. But it was just too short, so I never did it. And but I always wanted to. And then eventually I started doing stuff to like Bounce Rock Skate Roll because it was just a little bit slower and more funkier. And that's when I did my first rap to it at my high school.
Yeah. You were saying, though, a moment ago, there was something about me. Was it the vocal interplay or just the contrast in voices on Cameo that was also partly what you were thinking about in trying to develop your own senses?
Oh, yeah. They did so many different things. I mean, with vocals, if you listen to it, there's like a, ooh, that's a song. Then I always like to. It's like, wow, it's like a Ohio player's take. But something else, then you have the high voice coming in and on the ballad on Why Have I Lost You, they do the first verse in a regular voice and the high pitched voice come in. I mean, it was just a very creative album. And for them to be putting out the albums back to back to back, they was in the studio all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. They must have been just working their butt off.
This makes me think of just hearing you go, you know, say the owl part of it makes me think of mid 80s Cameo, right? We're talking about the Word Up era.
Yeah, they probably just made it more and more and more.
Yeah.
And got more of the good stuff from the old albums and kept it with it.
Were you surprised to hear the band shift in that direction? Because...
Oh, no. They kept up with the time. Like when they left the drummer and got a drum machine, it was like, okay, everybody else is doing it.
Right.
And they downsize, you know, because I guess bringing 20 people on a row, you can't make that much money, you know. Like, we're getting $100,000 for the show, but we're getting $10,000 each. I'm like, dang. So I know why they downsized, and Larry Blackmon was just a genius. Just kept it going.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about Blackmon in terms of what did you see him bringing, you know, as a band leader, as a singer, as a musician that helped to define Cameo.
It was it. He was Cameo. I mean, his ideas were just genius. So if you listen to all the songs, I mean, all the albums, every one, it gets better and better and better and better, you know? I just say Cameosis because that's my favorite. Right. Shake Your Pants is probably my favorite song that they ever did in life.
Right.
But I still love the later stuff they did, Candy, you know, Word Up. I love all that stuff. Just Cameo is just one of the best groups ever, and I don't think they got the acknowledgement that they should have. They should have been so much bigger. I mean, when they talk about Rick James, Michael Jackson, and Prince, Cameo should have been right there with them.
Right. And even, you know, going back to the Word Up era, you know, I think a lot of people saw that as being more derivative of, let's say, the Time or of Prince's stuff, rather than Cameo kind of standing on their own or on the same level as a Prince or whatnot. Going back to Cameosis specifically, so we talked about the Fire Track, we talked about the Sleeper Jam. Is there a song on here that you would either want to see covered or remixed by a contemporary artist? What would the song be, and who would you want to see take it on?
Well, I was just thinking that. It's one song that starts off with a bass line. I just hear a funk band doing that, like Dame Funk or somebody doing that over, or XL Middleton, somebody from you know, the funk scene out here, are slowing it down. I mean, I can hear that in Dame Funk. I can hear it all day long. So that one definitely.
Yeah. If Morgan, if my co-host was here, she would definitely want to ask this question. So this is in honor of her, or even though she's absent. In thinking about Cameosis almost 40 years later, which is a little...
Wow.
Yeah, exactly, right? Do you think this album was of its time, ahead of its time, or timeless?
It was right on time.
Ah. How so?
Because it was right on time. Like what I said, the Poppers needed something better to dance to than I Just Want to Be and everything that was out on the radio at the time. And when Shake Your Pants came out, it's like, wow, what is this? It sounded like Cameo, but... It can't be, like, yes, brand new Cameo. Why are they not playing it on the radio? So by the time they got it on the radio, which probably was another 3 months down the road because they had to wait for the first single to die down, everybody was like, this record is the best one ever. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't beat this. And I don't know if Cameo ever did beat that record as far as the dancers go. That was a masterpiece.
Yeah. I mean, I should ask you, I mean, is there anything about this album that we didn't get to touch on that you think is worth exploring?
I think the band members, like the horn section, so amazing. I mean, back then, they were really playing horns to this music and doing different, you know, styles. And they probably could play a solo if they wanted to, but they were just doing little hits and stabs. And the horn section through this time period is amazing on all these different albums. Mm. And Cameo put it right in the pocket, and it was just great. So if you listen to the album from beginning to end, you hear the horns every now and then. You hear the guitars. They don't use guitars like that anymore, you know, bass guitar, lead guitar. And it's just incredible. So I was listening to it. When I told you I was going to do the album, I listened to it again. I was listening to the drummer because, you know, I like the 808 drum machine and all this. But I listened to the drummer, and the drummer is just amazing. So when you see a band play or you hear them record, you have to listen to everything, not just the vocal, what they're singing, but listen to the whole album, but only listen to the drums. Listen to only the bass the next time around. Listen to only the guitars or the horns or the strings, and you can hear all the time and effort they put into the song, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And to me, that I just think of how it carries over from so many groups in the 70s where that horn section was so essential. You think about Kool and the Gang. You think of Tower of Power.
Good. Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah. you take the horns out of that, and it's a completely different group.
Right.
It's a completely different sound. And then, you know, by the 80s, when you're deep enough into it, that the horn section is one of the things that gets left behind.
Because of the synthesizer.
Exactly.
The synth came out, that kind of did it for the bands. I mean, Prince took the synthesizer to another level, and it just killed the bands. So I think Prince and Zap, that was it. They were so funky that it was no more room for, you know, horns and real drums and all. They just did it. I mean, it was like, wow. But that was another era. That was later on.
Right. Every revolution costs something, right?
You
got to leave something behind in the process. We always end with this question for our guests, which is, if you had to describe Cameosis using just three words, what would those three words be?
Shake your pants.
Oh, that was too easy. But quite accurate, quite accurate. That'll do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Egyptian Lover. Thank you for coming through. Where can people find more about you?
Man, go on Instagram and Facebook and just check me out. I post pictures when I travel around the world. And for my friends, really, my homies back in the hood, he's like, man, post a picture of some of that food they have out there. I'm like, all right, I'll do that. And I'll post a picture of some of the crazy food they eat out there and different places. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, I grew up in the hood, so I never thought I'd ever be able to see the Eiffel Tower or Sydney Opera House, and actually played in the Sydney Opera House. So I'm living a dream right now, and it's just amazing. So I tell my homies, like, this stuff is real. Like you need to read more, because I hated history growing up, and now I'm like, I love it. Like, we need to read more about the history and learn more about the history, because all this stuff was real. Like, there really was a Napoleon. It wasn't just a story. And it's pretty amazing.
And what's your Facebook and Instagram handles?
Just The Egyptian Lover. If you go to The, T-H-E, Egyptian Lover. So there's only one E between The and Egyptian Lover. So just Google it and check it out.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wang. My co-pilot, Morgan Rhodes, will be back with us by the next episode. Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One from People Under the Stairs. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Heat Rocks is produced by myself, Morgan Rhodes, Shayna Deloria, and Kara Hart. And today's show was engineered by Kara and edited by Shayna. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and executive producer is Jesse Thorne. We are part of the Max Fun family, taping every week live in the very cameo-friendly Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles. As always, we want to thank our listeners, especially Solo One Love, In General Peters, and Squid Meat for their 5-star reviews on iTunes. Thank you so much for that. As always, for our listeners, if you just have a spare minute and don't mind going there and leaving a review for us, it is a huge way in which we build our audience. And likewise, I know if Morgan was here, she would want to send some big love out to our social media folks, including Brigham Fisher, Bruce Is Dumb, Jess Marla 724, Story Stoic, Camp Firewood, The Rob Milton, and Dan Trace Omi for all the tweezies and retweezies. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Heat Rocks Pod. You can find a link to our Facebook group on our webpage. That's heatrockspod.com, and that is where we will post show notes for every episode, including a track listing and everything that you've heard today and other goodies. Again, that's at heatrockspod.com. Before we go, we want to leave you with a little bit of a teaser from next week's episode. In fact, we're going to have two back-to-back episodes all about Michael Jackson. First up is the leader and founder of Antibalas, Martin Perna, and he joined us to talk about Michael Jackson's Off the Wall.
So much of this album, as a music nerd, is written in clave, like this sort of rhythmic syntax that governs every kind of music from West Africa, from Brazil, from the Caribbean. And getting to sort of hear those snippets of the making of, like, oh, he's versed in this. He's really versed in this. And when he gets to the opportunity to write and put forth these songs, that comes out in the compositions.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.